Chapter 25. In the Key of Perfection. I meet the maestros on the steps of Harmony Hall. They're all there, along with Mrs. LaRue, dressed in coats and hats since the night is cold. At least the rain has stopped for now, though the ground squelches and puddles lie everywhere. Students are scattered across the grounds, many in costume. I can hear the boom of Rebel Clef's drums in the gym, where the Halloween party is taking place. Instead of their usual rock spells, they're playing a version of one of my favorite blues spells, In the Hall of the Mountain King by Edvard Grieg. The eerie, suspenseful melody drifts over the school grounds, and a few loose illusions slip free of the gym, shadowy specters conjured by the band members. Looking like ghosts draped in black shrouds, they float through the air, then vanish when they stray too far. But the sky is as dark as midnight, even though it's only just after dinner. Black clouds knot and bunch over the mountains. The air feels tense, like one wrong move will make the whole sky break loose. A cold wind prowls the school, ruffling the skeletal trees and the peacock feathers on Mrs. LaRue's broad-brimmed hat. "Good evening, Miss Jones," the headmaestro says. The others just nod at me. Not even Miss Nurani has a smile for me now. I fidget with my flute case, unsure what to do, then fall behind them when they start walking, limping a little. My two small uniform shoes are pinching more than usual today. I'd expected us to go inside, but it seems this test will take place outdoors, behind Harmony Hall, in the Echo Wood. Or at the edge of it, I discover, when the maestros all stop and circle around a waist-high tree. My tree, of course. It's still bent like an elbow, its leaves fallen, leaving it even more scraggly. Looking at it, I think, one day, it will be perfect to hang a swing on. If I can save it from being uprooted, that is. "What do you want me to do?" I ask. Mrs. LaRue gestures at my tree. "This is your opportunity to show us what you've learned." For a moment, I wait to see if she's going to add anything more, but it seems these are all the instructions I'm going to get. But it's pretty clear what she means. This is my chance to redo my first audition, my chance to get it right. I'm surprised. I'd expected something much harder. A grueling, hours-long exam demanding me to play spell after spell, throwing obscure magic theory questions at me. But this is easy. In fact, I couldn't have hoped for a simpler test. Then I realize, maybe this is just a formality, so they can say I earned my way here instead of landing here by accident. Maybe they were never going to kick me out at all. My heart starts to beat faster. I can do this. I know I can. As long as other Amelia doesn't interfere. Now would be the perfect time for her to strike if she wants to get me kicked out for good. "Please," I think. "If you're here, please just give me this. I'm begging you." Since it's clear the maestros want to see which spell I'll choose, I go with Papageno's Aria, a quick green spell from my favorite opera, The Magic Flute, which is based on my favorite book. And probably my mother's favorite book. So that has to be lucky, right? It's an intermediate spell, not as high level as some of my classmates might be capable of, but impressive enough. At least, I hope so. It's a light tune, notes bouncing happily along, and I have the whole thing memorized. And as I play, the magic spirals from my flute and wraps around the little tree, straightening its limbs, pushing the trunk upward. It even puts out fresh new leaves, which unfurl like tiny petals of silk. The tree creaks and sways, glowing with green light. I don't look at the maestros once. I learned that lesson. Instead, I focus wholly on the tree, the perfect musician. Everything I've learned in my classes, I pour into my flute, even remembering to keep my posture just right. I don't miss a note. I don't think even other Amelia could have played better, and she doesn't so much as pull my ponytail as I play. As I hold the final note, the little tree's leaves shiver, sending a shower of sparkling magic dust shimmering to the ground. And then it's done. Breathing hard, I lower my flute and can't help the smile that spreads over my face. My echo tree is straight, strong, perfect. Just like all the other echo trees in the echo wood. Before, it looked out of place, crooked and strange, an accident. Now it belongs. Now you could walk right past it without ever knowing it was different. I look up at the maestros. They exchange looks that I can't read. Miss Nurani then glances at me and raises a finger. Wait a moment, Miss Jones. She and the other maestros move a few feet away, where they whisper among themselves, urgently, like they can't agree. Uh-oh. Not good. My heart starts to sink again. What did I mess up? I hit every note. I fixed my tree. Was it my spell choice? Did they expect something more advanced? While I watch them, I pass my flute from hand to hand, sweat starting to slide down my temples despite the cold. Overhead, the echo trees groan with their orchestra sound, dissonant notes that usually seem beautiful, but tonight they have an eerie flat tone, like a warning. The wind is rising, stronger and stronger. Looking up, I see the clouds are lower than they were, and they're moving around, swirling and swelling. A burst of lightning cracks inside them, lighting them up from the inside, searching for a way out. The air tightens up more. If the wind were a violin string, it would snap at the first touch of the bow. The maestros are still arguing. They don't seem to notice the storm that's about to break loose. Mr. Pinwhistle is smashing his fist into his palm, his mustache fluttering in the wind. Oh no, please, please don't let it come down to Mr. Pinwhistle convincing the others to expel me. I don't get why he hates me so much. I've never complained once about the extra homework he assigns to me. And it's not like the mustache growth was permanent. So what's his problem? I can't watch them anymore. It's just making me feel sick. Instead, I pack away my flute and then grip the case with both hands, staring hard at the ground. My echo tree, which shone with magic just minutes ago, now sits dark and dull. But as the wind strengthens, its leaves rustle, then clatter like chimes. Miss Jones. Looking up, I see Mrs. LaRue and the others watching me. I swallow hard. If there's a problem, I can do it again. I can play a harder spell, I know I can. If, Miss Jones, you played very well. Then why does she look like she's about to deliver bad news? However, she adds, we feel that... I don't hear the rest, because it's plain on her face what she's saying. I failed. They're sending me away. A roar fills my ears that has nothing to do with the weather. I sway on my feet, my stomach dropping to the ground. My flute feels like it weighs 100 pounds, and my hands begin to sweat as I cling to the case. And in the end, Mrs. LaRue finishes, the vote was 4-1. The maestros all look at me apologetically, except for Mr. Pinwhistle, who's already storming back toward Harmony Hall. I glare at his back, knowing he's the one responsible for getting me expelled. He must have swayed them to his side. But who was the one who voted for me? I search their faces and settle on Miss Nurani. She gives me a small, sad smile. At least one of them saw something in me. Half of me wants to rise up and fight, to demand answers. Why? What did I do wrong? What could I have done differently? Wasn't I perfect? Wasn't I everything they wanted me to be? But the other half of me has given up. It's tired of fighting, of reaching for the impossible. Face the facts, Amelia Jones. You're not your mother. You're more like your dad. A loser. A wash-up. You're not good enough. You never were. I go back to my room and change into my old clothes. I fold my Mistwick outfits carefully and store them in the closet. All my things are packed, and I leave tomorrow after breakfast on one of the zeppelins. That's when I lose it. I curl up on the bed and bawl like a baby. I'm not proud of it, but it's the truth. Outside, I can hear the students shouting. Rebel Clef's spells crash against the window, just dull thumps and vague lyrics from this distance. There will be candy and cake and punch in the cafeteria, but I don't have the heart to go get it. And I don't want anyone to see me like this. They'll ask why I was crying, and then I'll have to tell them. It's better if I just sneak out. No goodbyes. Amelia Jones gone in the night. They'll find out I flunked out, of course, but at least I won't have to see their faces when they do. The only regret I have is Jai. I hate leaving with things between us like they are. I hope he's not too mad at me. I hear footsteps in the hallway outside, and then three familiar notes from a whistle key. Sitting up, I wipe my face furiously, but when Darby walks in, she must see right away that I was crying. She blinks, then looks away. "You're back early," I say, my voice scratchy. She shrugs. Didn't feel like partying. She takes off her jacket and hangs it up, then glances over her shoulder at me. "You failed your test." It's not a question. I sigh, then nod. I don't know what happened. I played perfectly. It still wasn't good enough. I guess you were right all along. I don't belong here. I'm not like your Amelia, and I never will be. Darby stands in front of her small desk mirror and brushes her hair. It's grown out a bit since school began, now hanging below her shoulders. Still razor straight and black as ink.
"Nobody could be my Amelia," she says softly. "She was fire and vinegar," my mom used to say. "A girl who knew what she wanted and did whatever it took to get it."
I wish I could be like that. I thought I was before coming to Mistwick. "You'll be glad to have the room to yourself," I say. "At least until they find someone to take my place." Darby snorts. She sets down her hairbrush and throws herself across her bed. For a minute, I think she'll say something almost halfway nice, like that she'll miss my awful flute playing, or that her new roommate will be even worse than me. Some insult you have to dig through in order to find the compliment, Darby style. But she just flops over on her side, her back to me. "So I guess that's it. Goodbye to you too, Rumi." Angrily, I jump up and walk to the window. It's not even 8 o'clock yet, and our curfew is extended for the holiday. Maybe I will go to the party, if only to stuff my pockets with candy for the ride home. If I slip in the back door of the gym, no one will even notice me. But when I reach the window, all thoughts of candy vanish from my head. I blink. And blink again. "Darby?"
"I don't want to talk."
"Darby?" She sits up, frowning.
"What?"
I shake my head. It's... But my voice sinks into my stomach, and my stomach sinks to the floor. My body goes cold from head to toe as I try to make sense of the thing outside our window. Darby shoves me aside to look. Her eyes grow wide, and she presses her hands to the glass.
"Is that a tornado?"